On revenue for Monday, April 30, 2007, will come to order. We're going to take the agenda more or less in order. Let's open the public hearing on House Bill 3046. And Mary's on that one. Okay. You're up.
House Bill 3046 creates a property tax exemption for property used for a natural gas pipeline extension project, including later additions and/or improvements. If the project receives funds from the Oregon Unified International Trade Fund and the project is owned by a local government. As background for this, Coos County built and owns a natural gas pipeline, and Northwest Natural Gas operates it at a cost for the to the county. I believe that's one of the issues it's made. However, the department imposes a property tax on natural gas on the basis of its use of the pipeline.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have two witnesses signed up, Nikki Witte and Gary Bauer.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Nikki Witte, a Coos County Commissioner, and I read the testimony that Northwest Natural Gas prepared for you, and it's almost identical to mine. So I would just like to say that the entire main transmission line is owned by the county. Nobody ever was under any impression that there might be property taxes on it. As you know, we've lost half of our general fund, and there really isn't any way to pay property taxes. And the project is not a profitable situation. So I think with that, we do support the bill, and I'll turn it over to Gary.
Thank you.
Thank you. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, I'm Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural. With me is Robert Manicky. He's a tax attorney with the Stoll Reeves Law Firm to help answer questions, because this gets technical fairly fast. As Commissioner Witte mentioned, this project actually goes back. The concept for decades was studied whether or not to build a natural gas pipeline from basically Roseburg over to Coos County, and eventually it was never considered economic. So the county came to the legislature back in 1997 and again in 1999. In both cases, the legislature passed legislation finding that that there was a need to develop infrastructure in the county, and that the county, they should go forward with a pipeline. The state put in approximately $20 million towards the project. The county raised additional funds through a bonding measure, and the county constructed the natural gas transmission pipeline from Roseburg over to the county. Northwest Natural reached an agreement with the county to build out a local distribution system, which means the smaller pipes that go throughout the streets in the community into the homes and businesses. In March of 2006, the Supreme Court, Oregon Supreme Court, upheld a tax court ruling that involved an electric generating facility, and some of you who were on the committee last session, I think, are aware of the Klamath Falls project. And in that case, it basically found that it was subject to being a centrally assessed entity and subject to having to pay property taxes on that project. Another Supreme Court decision, also fairly recent, related to the cooperative's use of the intertie. I think you've also had a hearing on that this session. So this topic is not new to you. After the court issued the PPM, the Klamath Falls decision, the Department of Revenue approached Northwest Natural in 2006 and indicated they were going to include the county's pipeline in the company's property tax assessments because the company, Northwest Natural, uses the pipeline. We disagree with the view that view, but also believe that the economics of the pipeline show it's essentially fulfilling a public purpose that would justify exemption from the tax. We do not use the pipeline in the way that PPM used the Klamath Falls power plant or the cooperatives used the intertie. Our involvement with the pipeline, we do not believe, rises to those levels. We maintain the pipeline is much more of a passive mechanism. It's similar to a water line, a pipe that anybody else connects to and uses, in which you are not subject to paying taxes using that kind of a facility. Our agreement with the county for operating the pipeline means we maintain it, we check for damages, we arrange for occasional repairs, and for that we receive $24,000 a year. It is not a profit-making activity. Our right to transport gas through the pipeline is for a limited duration, unlike the cooperatives, which was a basically for the life of the project. So we think those are some distinctions. Again, we view the project essentially as a public economic development project, a public works type of project. Again, it was funded by the state and by the county to try to bring economic development to a region that desperately needed some growth and activity. Because we do not own the pipeline, it's not included in our rate base. In other words, we do not earn any revenue off of the pipeline. We do not make a profit off of the pipeline. And so we think requiring Northwest Natural to pay prop tax on the pipeline is unfair and inappropriate. We do own, again, as I said, the distribution system. We pay, which consists of the smaller pipes, and we do pay property taxes on that system. I'm trying to jump through my testimony. When we looked at drilling the system, I'm trying to again point out this is not a moneymaker. We spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to make this system work and how to make it economic. And it, quite frankly, did not meet the test to do that. We had to spend a lot of time with our regulator, the Public Utility Commission, and our customer groups in order to find a way to make this work for Coos County. And we did that, again, during that process, never contemplated the potential of having to pay taxes on the county's portion of the pipeline. I'll kind of wrap this up quickly in that under the service agreement that we do have with the county, we also stress that in that the county is ultimately responsible for all costs associated with the pipeline. And that includes, we believe, federal, state, and local fees. And so there's now and starts a debate over whether or not you charge us for the taxes and we assess those back against the county. So that just to let you know how complicated this could easily get. I do want to make an additional comment. The Department of Revenue has raised a question about the language in the legislation that talks about including any later additions or improvements. The idea there was that the county may extend their pipeline down to Bandon. So that would be an addition. Again, it would be the county constructing it, not Northwest Natural. In fact, we do not have an agreement to serve the area, the city of Bandon. In addition, the county may have to make other types of additions. They could be compressors. They could be other things necessary for operating and maintaining the facility. This facility is tied to receiving the money that it received from the state through a very specific fund, and the property has to be owned by a governmental entity in order for it to be exempt. So we tried to write it as narrowly as possible in conjunction with the county. We'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just be interested in knowing, perhaps this panel isn't the right one, I don't know, but I'm interested in finding out what distinguishes, in essence, the Roseburg to Coos Bay project from any other natural gas pipeline extension project?
Could I try to answer that? Chair Barnhart and Representative Witt, when Coos County started this project and working with the PUC and the legislature, we were kind of an anomaly because there isn't or wasn't any project like that in the state of Oregon, and I think they looked nationally to see. The PUC didn't even know what to do with this because counties don't normally own main transmission trunk lines.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
Thank you, and I guess I wasn't specific on my question. I am presuming that House Bill 3046 is intended just to cover the Roseburg to Coos Bay project, and if that be the case, I'm wondering what in the legislation distinguishes this so that other natural gas pipeline extension projects would not qualify for this as well, for this property tax exemption.
I'll try. Chair Barnhart, Representative Witt. If you look in the legislation beginning on lines 8, the project has to have received money from the Oregon Unified International Trade Fund, which was a fund established in the legislation to fund this project and a few other types of projects, I think dredging and some other issues. And it has to be owned by a unit of local government. And so it would not apply to any other pipeline that's constructed, whether it's constructed by Northwest Natural, Williams Pipeline, other entities that construct and build natural gas pipelines.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Other Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I recognize that any of the costs that may be associated with assessing a taxation on this particular piece of pipeline that's owned by the county would be borne by the county. Do we know how much that cost would be? What's the current assessed value and the tax to it? It was a fairly expensive project and borne by the county and bonds and taxpayers.
Chair Barnhart, Representative Butler, I can't give you an exact amount. When the state first brought it up, I mean, it is about a $40-some million project. And I'll let the county answer that. It's their project. After our discussions with the Department of Revenue, and they basically decided it was a de minimis value to the Northwest Natural at this point. But in that process, if you roll it into the formula, it then affects the distribution of the tax dollars throughout the state.
So if I could follow up, Mr.
Please,
Chair.
Please.
So Commissioner Witte, I'm assuming that because the pipeline is in Douglas County and other counties, that then Coos County would then own property, a transmission line, a fractional interest in one county and a fractional interest in another, the whole line itself. Do you have any idea how much the property taxes would be on $40 million?
Well, actually, the line was more like $51 million, and I believe there's a gentleman from the Department of Revenue that can tell you what value Department of Revenue, they assessed the industrial property, our assessor's office didn't. So they can, I think he can tell you.
Mr. Chair, I just going to say this again, and this goes back to the same questions we had when we saw this last session, and that is that I get visions in my head of a dog eating its own hind leg off when it gets hungry. So I think at some particular point we've got to say, wait a minute, this is a line that is only for us, this scope and the language of the bill is extremely narrow, that it addresses only this particular government-owned pipeline that is probably one of the, was at the time, one of the greatest highlights of the things that we could do for Coos County. And to have it come back now and bite us in this particular manner, and if these folks had to pay tax on $51 million, it would make the 800-plus customers, it would make it so expensive for either the county or the customers that we're plumb foolish to have ever gone that direction. And I'd hate for us to find ourselves in that condition. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Other questions, comments? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on House Bill 3046 at this time?
Mr. Chairman, please. Mr. Chairman, as John is coming up, I would certainly hope that we would take this under consideration to line 3046 up for a work session so that we can act upon it seeing at this particular time no amendments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Phillips of the Oregon Department of Revenue. Thank you. The department doesn't take a position on this bill. We've had conversations with Gary and Robert in the past about this issue. We've talked about it. They approached us in the summer about maybe writing an administrative rule that would lay out the public-private partnerships that do occur and how that's sorted for tax purposes. And we did commit a good amount of time and effort working on that. We couldn't write a rule that went around the law, and the law was clear that use constitutes, and the Supreme Court has interpreted your policy decision that it's a taxable incidence. So we discussed our findings and our efforts with Northwest Natural and Gary and Robert, and We've got the bill. We talked about it. We met and talked about it. The only thing that we raised at the meeting was line 5 and 6, where it talks about the project and describing what property is exempt, and it specifically mentions the project funded by a certain funding mechanism, but to include any later additions or improvements. We expressed that we didn't know what that was because there may be improvements or additions in the future that are planned or unplanned that we can't comment on because we don't know anything about them. So anyway, that's the one question mark we had in the bill. But again, you know, this is just strictly a straight-up policy decision. We did assign a de minimis value. What that value specifically is, I don't know, because we don't value property discreetly in terms of this piece of property or that piece of property. But we did recognize that it had a very limited, very minimal contributory value. It only serves just a few customers. So that's how it works in the reverse, is that when it contributes little, it's taxed little. And so there's very little tax incidence with this situation.
Thank you.
So I hope that's helpful.
Yeah, it is. Thank you. Questions for Mr. Phillips, Representative Butler?
John, as you read the concerns about the potential abandoned pipeline on line 6, does the line 10, where the owner continues to be a local government, does that give you any comfort in that regard? So if Coos County decided to extend the main line for economic development reasons and continue to own the line, even though it may not be a profitable operation for the company at all, does that assuage your concerns?
Mr. Chair, Representative Butler, if you're thinking about all the possibilities and you think a multi-billion dollar entity went into abandon, let's say, a large facility, which may never happen, but let's talk about it, since you brought it up, and the use of the pipeline increases from the whatever it is, 1% that it is now, to 50% of the pipeline, and they're making some good money, then that's going to be, it would all be exempt. And that's fine. It's whatever you want. It's just, right now, it's a de minimis tax consequence. But we don't know what tomorrow it's going to be.
And sort of a follow-up on that. Do you think that that this language in including later additions or improvements to the pipeline could be written in a more explicit way that would remove some of that ambiguity?
At our meeting, we suggested that we just strike the including any later additions or improvements, because at the time I didn't hear anything that expressed that would hurt the intent of the bill from removing that, but that's what I would do based on removing any concerns we had about what that meant. We know what the project is. We know where the pipeline goes now.
I'm wondering if the county and the Northwest Natural could get together and discuss this, and maybe somebody from the committee, if we had somebody who wanted to, Representative Butler, to see if you can work that out. I'd like to move the bill, and I'd like to have it written in a way that the agency doesn't have problems with because of ambiguity.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And is there anyone else now who'd like to be heard on House Bill 3046? If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3046. Thank you. We have four bills for hearing today which are very similar, and what I intend to do is open them all at once for hearing, and then we'll see where we get to with that, and we'll reserve a little time at the end of our meeting to do the work sessions. And with that, we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2810, House Bill 2811, House Bill 3225, and House Bill 3177. Chris?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you should have a sheet in your packet that is entitled 2007 Child Care Credit Bills, which just briefly summarizes the bills. They're all fairly concise bills. The first three deal with or make changes to the credit for contributions to the Child Care Division of the Employment Department. 2810A changes the sunset on that credit from January 1, 2009 to January 1, 2029. House Bill 2811 removes the $500,000 annual limit on tax credit certifications that can be issued by the department, and that would take effect for tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2008. House Bill 3225 is kind of a mesh of the two. It removes the sunset date, not just extending it, and also removes the $500,000 limit. And the limit there would apply to tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2008. The fourth bill dealing with child care credits is 3177, and that expands the working family child care credit to taxpayers who incur child care expenses because of a disability that prevents them from providing child care, being employed, or attending school. The current law for qualifying for that credit would be that the taxpayer would have to be doing one of those three. This changes that, so if a disability prevents that, then they would qualify for a credit. And that would be effective January 1, 2007.
Very good. And let's hear from, it looks like there's people, we're going to hear them in order. Rosetta Wangerin, Maryland States, Melissa Gritz. And then on deck we have Terry Hansen and it looks like Holly Powell. Go ahead. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, I'm Rosetta Wangren and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Commission for Child Care. I respectfully urge you to support House Bill 2810A and House Bill 2811. The Child Care Contribution Tax Credit is an innovative tax credit that is a positive impact for children and working families in Oregon. Our commission is an 18-body membership that is appointed. They're volunteers, and they're appointed by the governor, by the Speaker of the House, and President of the Senate. And we advise on issues, problems, solutions that are related to affordable quality child care in Oregon. And we advocate for availability of safe, quality, and affordable child care. The Commission for Child Care prioritized affordable quality child care for Oregon children and working families during 2006. Since this legislation was enacted in 2003, we have been excited about what we've observed, private citizens contributing to child care here in Oregon. They receive a tax credit, and now with a budget of $513,000, we've ensured that over 700 children receive quality child care while their parents worked. By extending the sunset date on the Child Care Contribution Tax Credit in House Bill 2810A, this efficient project will ensure that children can access quality and safe child care. By eliminating the cap in House Bill 2811, the Child Care Contribution Tax Credit will align with other tax credits and will enable the legislature to engage in further policy discussions regarding financing of child care in Oregon in future years. This would occur by Employment Department submitting a policy option package each session that is discussed in Ways and Means as part of the agency's budget process. The Commission for Child Care is a resource for you, and we hope that you will call upon us as we work together to support Oregon's children and working families. We want to thank you for your work on behalf of Oregon's children and working families, and we look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, my name is Heidi McGowan, and I'm the Executive Officer of the Commission for Child Care. I had hoped that Representative Kotek or Representative Flores might be able to join you to be able to explain what the benefits are of this tax credit. And since they're not here, I'm just going to frame briefly what this tax credit is doing in Oregon for our children.
Let me interrupt and simply say that other committees are working very hard on closing up their calendar for House bills. And Representative Kotek and Representative Flores planned to be here, but it turns out they're working on other things. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart. This House Bill 2810A and House Bill 2811 is really an innovative public-private strategy. It first began in 2003 when the legislature approved this strategy to improve the safety, quality, and affordability of child care by enacting the Oregon Child Care Contribution Tax Credit. By making a contribution to this program, taxpayers receive an Oregon state tax credit of 75 cents per dollar. Proceeds from the credits are used to create demonstration projects to show how child care works when it's adequately funded. By simultaneously addressing quality, affordability, and provider compensation, this innovative tax credit program is revealing the true cost of quality child care and is helping to restore balance in this critical sector of Oregon's economy. The goals of this legislation are to create an incentive for businesses and private citizens to invest in child care, to create a funding pool of private contributions that will promote and sustain the operation of quality, affordable child care businesses, and to target specific community needs such as infant toddler care, which is in severe shortage in Oregon, such as school age or after-hour care. Another goal is to assess the actual cost of quality child care by addressing quality, affordability, and compensation, and to strengthen child care businesses while making child care services more affordable to low-income families. The funds are managed by the Child Care Division within the Employment Department. As a result of this, any change in the amount that is contributed is then submitted to as a policy option package, which is part of the agency's budget, which is then heard through Ways and Means Committee. So it's already part of the internal process, since this is overseen by the Employment Department. As Rosetta commented, since this began in 03 when it was passed, with only a budget of 513,765 children in Lane County have been impacted. Very efficient project that's having a huge impact on children. We're very excited that the second project is starting in Multnomah County and is just getting off the ground, and we have a couple people from Multnomah County who will share with you about the need in Multnomah County, as it is in the rest of Oregon.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Rosenthal.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if you're the right people to answer this, but it seems to have a sunset that so far off in the future is kind of unusual and would make you question why we even have a sunset at all. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about that?
Sure. Representative Barnhart and Representative Rosenbaum. I was part of those discussions. The original legislation requested to eliminate the sunset. And in our previous committee in the Workforce and Economic Development and Workforce Committee, I think I might have that backwards, there was plenty of discussion about putting a date on it. I believe there were conversations with Representative Flores and Representative Kotek that came back with a proposition of 20 years. The reason is that for contributors, individuals and businesses, to project their contributions, they needed to know that it was long enough to know that they could plan that into their annual giving. And on the flip side, the businesses, the child care businesses that receive the donations, then can plan how long they can afford to stay in business, even, because the benefits of this program have such a positive impact on stabilizing child care businesses that that length of time seemed like it would give an adequate time for people to plan. So those were part of the initial discussions.
Thank you. Other questions? I have one. Getting back to the revenue committee aspects, I actually have a couple. The current rule allows for 75 cents on each dollar to be taken as a state tax credit. Mm-hmm. So if I contribute a dollar, I get a 75 cent credit on my Oregon income taxes. Am I still now? This is a state agency, or is it a 501c3, or how is it organized?
Oh, long question. Mm-hmm. Representative Barnhart, members of the committee.
In this committee, we deal with the nuts and bolts pieces, and this is one of those.
Of course, yeah. Absolutely. Tom Olson, the director of the Child Care Division, is joining us.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Olson. I'm an administrator of the Oregon Child Care Division. The way that the credit is organized, the money actually goes to the Employment Department. We have a special fund set up in our statute, 657A, called the Child Care Fund. And all contributions from the tax credit go directly into the Child Care Fund, and we administer them as a state agency through that fund.
All right. And so the next piece question I have is the dollar deductible on my federal income tax return as a contribution to the state that's not required by the tax law?
Chair Barnhart, that is between the taxpayer and their tax professional. We give no advice or make no recommendations.
I'm not asking for advice. I'm simply trying to find out whether, in fact, it is deductible under federal law, if we know.
Chair Barnhart, as far as we know, yes, it is. And a number of folks I know have taken that deduction.
Okay.
But whether or not, again, that's appropriate in every case, I couldn't give you that advice.
Right, and then the next question is it deductible as a charitable contribution under state law in addition to the credit that I would be applying for on a different line on my state tax return?
Chair Barnhart, to the best of my knowledge, it is not.
Thank you. And I'm getting a head shake from the sponsor of the bill. We'll hear from her in a second. Are there other questions for this panel? Thank you very much. We appreciate your being here. And as you can see, Representative Kotek has arrived, and we'll hear from her next.
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Tina Kotek, State Representative, House District 44. Thank you for hearing these bills today. And the folks you heard from are actually the experts, but I wanted to just speak in support of these bills. You know, we established this contribution credit, I think, in 2003, and then it went through some changes. And as you've probably heard from the previous testifiers, we've been able to start looking at how we can use these dollars to really get a handle on how to provide child care that's not only affordable but high quality. And we have the pilot going on in Lane County, and it's been very successfully run. And the bills you have in front of you, one is expanding the sunset. I think they added to 20 years in the previous committee. I would be supportive of that. And I'm a big proponent of actually putting a sunset on bills, and I know the original bill had no sunset, so I'm supportive of the 20 years. I think that's a good timeline in terms of encouraging investors to take advantage of this credit, to continue this pilot and continuing this effort to try to understand how to make child care more affordable and high quality. I also think the other bill that lists the cap, I think that's 2811. I'll be honest, if you have reservations about that, I think that's okay, but I would hope that you would expand the level of the credits available. Maybe taking off the cap completely is a little too generous, but I think it has been successful. I think there's a good track record, and so allowing a few more credits to be sold could allow us to go further with this project. So that's pretty much all I wanted to say. I can answer any questions from the best of my ability if you'd like, and thank you for hearing the bill. I think these bills are really important, and are it's a model that other states have looked at and have been watching very closely as a way of bringing in investment, but also doing something really targeted with it. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for Representative Kotek? Thank you very much. I don't have any either at this time.
Well, thank you. You come second when all the experts have done their spiel.
Well, we appreciate your taking time away from your other committee assignment this afternoon.
You're welcome.
To come and be here with us.
Thank you for having me, and good bills. Hope you pass them out. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We also have, now is Melissa Gertz here? And you have two people.
Yeah.
Please come.
Good afternoon, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. My name is Marilyn States, and I'm a program manager at Neighborhood House in Southwest Portland of Multnomah County. And I'm here in support of these two bills. For the biggest reason, we currently serve at Neighborhood House a program for family child care providers and centered child care businesses. And we work with family child care providers and centers to help improve the quality of child care. And in my job, I get a number of phone calls from parents who are looking for child care and unfortunately are not able to afford the options given to them in Multnomah County. And we have a very small subsidy program where we currently are able to help fund parents who are in school, and we can pay a portion of their child care, or a parent who has a one-time emergency. However, the parents who are working in a job where perhaps they make only $8 an hour and they're facing an $800 a month child care bill and they're just not able to make it, they are looking for me for help and I'm not able to give it to them. Sometimes this means having to put their child in substandard care with somebody who doesn't have knowledge or experience.
Thank you. You know, if you would sit back from the microphone or pull the microphone
better?
Away from you, it wouldn't distort so much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. That helps.
So anyway, these are parents who might not otherwise be able to afford care. With this tax credit program that Neighborhood House is just getting funded, similar to the Lane County program, we are going to be able to serve about 100 children with a monthly child care subsidy that will be tied to not only the affordability for their parents, but also helping to have them in a more quality setting where they'll be getting ongoing monthly visits and support. And so, anyway, I want to go ahead and pass this on to my staff, Melissa, who works right now with child care providers and has been doing a subsidy program with families. And thank you again for listening to us.
Thank you. Please.
My name is Melissa Greitz, and I'm the coordinator for the Child Care Community Fund. I am also a child care specialist with the Child Care Improvement Project with Neighborhood House. And I actually came to speak with you, Representative Barnhart, and members of the committee, regarding one of our families who receives a very small amount of support through another program and is struggling and would definitely benefit if she had the ability to utilize this program. And her name is Beverly. She is a grandmother. She's 61 years old. And her grandchildren have been removed from their mother's home and placed into foster care. And she is now fostering six grandchildren who are all siblings. She should be looking at retirement, and there is no way she is going to be able to retire anytime in the near future. She works full-time. Her husband was recently diagnosed with cancer, and so she is caregiving for him at home and is struggling with that, as well as the loss of her mother. At this point, if things continue the way they're going, she will have to return custody of the children to their fathers, and so the children would actually be split into three households rather than the one household. And this program, you know, with these bills, if they pass, hopefully Beverly would be able to utilize this program in Multnomah County and would be able to keep her grandchildren together in a stable environment where they're receiving high-quality care.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? What is the proposed budget for this service in Multnomah County, in the Multnomah County pilot project?
$500,000 a year.
Okay. So you expect that the cost is about $5,000 per child?
Well, we take into consideration the cost of the subsidy, the actual subsidy, and then the quality improvement piece for the child care providers where they'll have regular trainings and professional development scholarships and wage enhancements because, as we know, child care providers are woefully underpaid. So we want to encourage them to move up their career ladder, and by doing so, we'll have wage enhancements built into that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I guess I should ask one more question, and that is, and perhaps you're not the person to ask it of, but I'm assuming that this part of the program would also go through the Ways and Means process. Thank you. I'm getting head nods. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Terry Hansen and Holly Powell.
Hi, Chair, Representative Barnhart, and members of the committee. My name is Terry Hansen, and I work at the Child Care Resource and Referral Agency in Lane County. I'm also the Child Care Enhancement Program, which is kind of narrowed down to what we call CCEP, the Project Coordinator in Lane County. And I just want to say that the Child Care Enhancement Program, which is funded by the Contribution Tax Credit, addresses three aspects of the child care trilemma of accessibility, affordability, and quality child care. The Child Care Enhancement Program is a win-win for everyone. For businesses, it helps by offering the contribution tax credit. It also, they're the ones employing our parents. It helps offset any subsidy program from the state of Oregon, where the state, some of our families are just off of, they just get off of the state funding, or their co-pays are so high that they can't continue at a quality site. And so this program kicks in and helps those families out. It helps families afford quality child care. Often these families would have to make undesirable choices on where their children go. We have some families in this program that were split. One parent had to work at night and the other parent during the day because they couldn't afford child care. So it helps that it recruits and retrains and retains quality child care providers. In this field, there's a high turnover of providers in the state of Oregon, and there's a high need of child care. As you know, the CCEP also supports the historical social policy of the U.S. government established in 1970 and the 80s to stimulate growth of quality child care in the wake of the dramatic increase of mothers entering the workforce. Today, we have about 60% of mothers working. And I would say that there's a high percentage of those mothers are single mothers. Single mothers that need to work, but they also need to have a safe, quality place to place their children. And I brought a child care provider here with me. She's in my grant, and I'm going to turn it over to Holly.
Thank you.
Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, my name is Holly Powell. And I am I'm here in support of the House Bill 2810 and 2811. I'm the owner and director of the Growing Place Child Care and Preschool Center in a community approximately 30 minutes south of Eugene. We're a very small community. I started off doing daycare in my home, doing an in-home care, and did it for about 8 years and really changed my vision of what I wanted to be able to offer to the community. There were too many just little neighborhood daycares, or babysitters, I should say, that were not providing the quality that I feel children need to be ready for kindergarten. So I took the big step and opened up a child care center. Didn't think it was going to be quite as huge as it was as far as all the extra stuff for me. Got my feet into it with this vision of preparing children for kindergarten and wanted the best staff I could get. My number one thing that I realized was hard to do for a small business owner to have quality staff and to be able to pay them what they're really worth. And this grant has really helped me to be able to do that with the wage enhancement program or the wage enhancements. The program helps us to get more staff or more training each year. It helps cover the cost of that training, and in return, it also, as we grow higher in our education, we get checks every 3 months. We receive checks, or my staff does, based on, like I said, their education and their qualifying experience, which has been very great for them. They get very excited when the checks come. Which has been great for me because, like I said, it's not something that I can necessarily offer as a small business owner. Another one of the big things that has brought into it is I'm in a small community. My prices are a lot less expensive than most of the surrounding areas, but yet a year and a half into this, I started realizing that my parents were not able to afford even my rates for the quality care. I was at a point where parents were coming to me saying, we're going to have to pull our kids out. We just can't afford this anymore. Both parents were working, or it was single moms. Some of them would qualify for DHS, and some of them were just over the top of that wouldn't qualify, but were still really struggling. that's when Terry contacted me about this grant, and I had the option to be a part of it. And I immediately, there were probably six families that it helped immensely that were able to leave their children in my care. The turnover in children in my care has dropped immensely since this program went into effect, because they're not looking for the cheapest one down the neighborhood because they can afford it now with this grant. I just kind of went blank. I'm sorry. So what this has done is, like I said, it has helped the ones who don't quite qualify for DHS. One of the biggest issues that I face, I mean, I every day I'm so thankful for this grant and for the opportunity for the parents and for my staff and for myself, but I will say the future scares me to death as far as what is going to happen to my business and to all these kids that have been in my care when this does go away. I know I've had parents flat out tell me that their children will not be staying. They will have to find somewhere cheaper to go. And like I said, I'm not the most expensive. I'm very, very inexpensive compared to the areas around us. But I know that they will be pulling their kids, and it is a huge chunk of income coming into the daycare that would disappear, and I don't know how easy it would be to make up the difference in that with the community.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? Thank you, Representative Butler.
Just one question. Terry, you cited the statistics of mothers returning to the workplace and entering the workforce and single mothers. And we see more incidents of difficulties in child care centers throughout the state of Oregon, throughout the United States. Are there more per capita incidents of abuse and neglect and other problems in child care centers, or is this merely just a reporting issue? Can you give us a flavor of that?
Yeah, Chair Barnhart and Representative Butler, I really don't know from this grant. We're not, you know, as far as child abuse is related, we've had some situations come up where we had to educate the parent and educate the provider on surroundings, but I'm not finding it in this particular setting.
Okay,
because they are quality. We are raising that bar. I don't know, but it's in this setting we are really striving for quality, to raise that bar of child care in the state of Oregon, and to make these young people, we have men and women in this program, to see themselves as child care professionals that are educators of young children.
One just brief follow-up.
Okay.
Any kind of screening, LEDs, background for law enforcement division to examine these folks that are providing the care?
Well, they have to maintain an active license with the child care division, which looks at any kind of complaints or anything that comes into the thing, so they do have to maintain an active and current license with the child care division and fall under all the child care division rules and regulations for registered providers.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The history of this legislation is it was adopted in 2001, and it sure appears as though this was intended to be a pilot project. Have there been studies conducted as the project has gone along to demonstrate how the project has worked and whether it's successful or not?
Well,
do we have results of those studies?
Representative Barnhart, I don't. Right now, we have a one-year study that's out for the first year of this particular grant. But what I can tell you is that, because this grant is looking at networks and looking at things, we have been able to get. You know, I know our agency has gotten a network off of Peace Health that was taken from this model. And in order for the child care resource and referral agencies to continue to get businesses to buy into their employees and the child care cost, we need this project to be continued to further so that we can do those researches and tap into that information.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything further for this panel? Thank you. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to be heard on these child care bills today? Not seeing anyone. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 2810, 2811, 3177, and 2325. And we'll open a work session. Let's see, we're going back to tobacco, yes? We'll open a work session on House Bill 2968. Colleagues, I'm not certain that this bill is ready to work today, but I wanted to have a conversation about it. And I'll let you know also that I've discussed the issue with the Speaker, and he does want a subsequent referral on this bill if we do decide what to do with it to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. We've discussed this bill before. We've had it up for work before. There are three amendments that we're looking at. One of them simply inserts the $1.68, amendment number one, that I think would essentially return the revenue that we're getting now. Is that right, Mazin? Yes. The second one is the one that was really based on my suggestion that because there was a controversy about whether we should do the tax based on weight or based on continuing the current practice of taxing it. I'm sorry, the other way around, isn't it? Yes, whether the current method should be used or whether the alternative method should be used as an alternative tax, and someone referred to it as the alternative minimum tax. So that if you were a low weight but high cost product, you would pay the tax on one basis, and if you were a high weight low cost product, it would be taxed on the other basis. And the result of that would be that it actually would raise some revenue. Is that right, Mazin? Could you tell us a little about that?
Mr. Chair, because of the mechanism that this would work, it will push tax for some higher than others, and basically allows for the Department of Revenue to collect on the highest of those two taxes. And accordingly, we're estimating somewhere in the neighborhood of about 3.3 to 3.4 million a year.
Combination?
Yes.
Those are two.
Yes. That would be an increase?
Additional amount.
Per year.
Yes, sir.
And then the third alternative, the dash three amendments, would keep the current tax, but I'm sorry, I've got it wrong, don't I? Representative Butler, you brought this one, I think.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Would you like to explain it?
What the dash three amendment did today would actually take in lieu of the greater of the two, because there was a concern as to the difficulty of calculating the greater of weight or the values, because within the same reporting period, the weight could create a greater value than the actual market. Weight could create a greater tax than the value than the alternative, and so you could within the same reporting period be reporting different shipments at different amounts, and that left a greater responsibility and liability on the part of the provider. So in the alternative, the industry said, let's go ahead and account for that by raising it to from 168 through 09, and then 5 cents through 11, and then another five cents through 2012 and thereafter. So what it does is it takes it up basically a nickel at a time for the next few years through 2012, and it holds it at that higher value based upon weight and weight only, so that there would not be the accounting concern that there had been on the other. So that was the dash three amendment that the industry, portion of the industry, the proponents came forward with. And I, Mr. Chair, I did not ask for a fiscal on it. Perhaps legislative revenue has a fiscal.
Representative Butler, Mr. Chair, the fact of going to the weight, I think, would make a difference. And, of course, increasing those would make a difference. However, because of the lack of stabilizing, if you will, with the other two, this might produce more less revenue in addition than the cash checks, but it will be an increase over what we have today.
It would produce some additional revenue.
Right.
Over the dash two.
And Mr. Chair?
No, over the current law.
Oh, I'm sorry, over current law, but not over the... I see, dash two would produce more.
Right.
I got it.
For
thanks.
At least the first couple of biennials.
Right.
And then, Mr. Chair, there was a concern about the American Cancer Society, where they would come in. They had conflicting testimony regarding all of the issues relative to wet tobacco, and I did not go back to them. I think Representative Reed may have had some contact.
Is there someone here from the Lung Association or the Cancer Association who would like to talk about that? I made the assumption that if they liked the current system, they couldn't object to one that would add a new one that would raise more money.
No.
But I don't know that for certain because I haven't actually discussed it with them.
I think, Mr. Chair, their testimony was that there was just too much sickness as a result of tobacco. Reading Courtney Dresser's remarks, we know the science behind the addictiveness of tobacco, nicotine's tar, those kinds of things. But I never could really get my arms around the issues of the concerns of raising the cost for everyone. And then finally, Dr. Melcon indicated that there are two-thirds of the youth market market goes to the premium product, according to what Dr. Melcon said, and that in Oregon there are 425 cases a year of oral cancer. So I don't know that changes under either one of these methods, but it does increase the price. And if the youth go for the more expensive at that point, then I guess they'll have to cough up more dough to do it.
Thank you. Representative Gelser.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. If I remember correctly, I think the concern was, and I raised this concern to Dr. Cohen and others that were opposed to the bill, I had assumed that kids would be more likely to use the cheap snuff, and so this would make that more expensive and put it out of reach. But what they've actually found is that there's kind of that Nike brandization of these smokeless tobacco products, and two-thirds of the products that children use are those more expensive ones. And what this would result in effectively would be a price decrease to the more expensive products that the kids are actually using. It took a little while for me to get my arms around that because I know that the concerns of the Coalition for Tobacco-Free Kids and the American Cancer Society and certainly Dr. Cohn have all been pretty consistent in their support of measures that would reduce access to tobacco products by kids. And so when they oppose something by suggesting that they think it's going to get it into more kids' hands, that gives me great pause. Even if it might raise more money, I think we shoot ourselves in the foot if we inadvertently raise our public health costs by having more kids using tobacco products.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Representative Reed.
I probably need to note a conflict of interest with respect to my employer, though. I'm not sure my employer would like being associated with tobacco products. But given that, I
don't think so either.
I concur with what Representative Gelser said, and I would be more supportive of the dash two approach, the alternative minimum approach of raising the price for all types of products so that that brand effect is limited.
And I note, too, thank you for that, and I note, too, that in our conversation about that proposal in our hearing, the Revenue Department said they would do what they were told to do. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would I'd be interested in knowing where the Cancer Society and others come down on the Dash 3 amendments, because I believe these would be significantly easier probably to administer rather than having to decide in which category two different potential taxes might fall, as would be the case with the Dash 2 amendments.
It's interesting. I've heard that argument, but I just can't believe that it has a lot of weight. They calculate. thank you. It wasn't intended to be a pun. They calculate based on the ad valorem process now, and the calculating baseline weight should be pretty simple since all these things are labeled. We use computers to do all of this work now, doing it in the alternative, and having the computer pick the larger of the two numbers shouldn't be all that difficult. At least that's my view of it. I think, though, it would be a good idea to get a response from the revenue department about this, and I would like to have a revenue statement on these two amendments that we don't have. And I'm particularly interested in two things. One is the generation of revenue, and also is in the opinion of our economist on price elasticity, because I think that goes along with some of the health issues that we're concerned about, and it may. I'm also, of course, then would be interested in the opinion of the health advocates on it after they've had a chance to look at the revenue statement. And you know, I wasn't as quickly scribbling notes, so I must have had said something useful. Representative Berger.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, I would agree. I am concerned that the dash twos are going to tie us up in sort of an odd, we measure one way, we measure another way, then we see what happens, and it complicates everybody. I am also not, the price point issue, gee, I hate these tobacco wars, as they're called. They're the most studied product in the world and yet one of the most misunderstood. It's counterintuitive to me that kids buy high-end, I won't use that descriptor, tobacco products here. One of the things that occurs to me is that we're contemplating some other, you know, cost increases, tax increases on cigarettes, which are the bulk of what, you know, gets people hooked on tobacco. Where does, if someone switches, for instance, from cigarettes to this product, how does it compare in cost for the user? I have no sense of that. So when you start talking about price point, I have no sense of why would you use this? I have no sense of why you would use this product, period. So I'm kind of at a loss when you start talking about, you know, these price point issues. I don't know enough, and I have a feeling somebody's going to come in my office and tell me a lot.
More than you want to know.
More than I want to know, but I am very concerned that the dash twos are making it more complicated than it ever would need to be.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Butler. May I suggest that if we have this testimony, that we bring someone in from the industry. Mm-hmm. For instance, the A&S Tobacco, A&S Marketing, which is a tobacconist that we visited last session as a revenue office, those folks do not use computers on each and every purchase when they try and consolidate that information into these very, very voluminous reports, because every a decision has to be made on virtually every purchase, and the reports are virtually done by hand at this particular point. And that's one of the larger tobacconists amongst the private operators in the state, and there's a lot of reports that are required. So if we actually have those folks come to the table from the Department of Revenue, maybe we could have somebody from the private industry come in and say, yeah, this is a piece of cake because we're already doing loose tobacco by volume as it is. We can do this for you. I'd hesitate to have the Department of Revenue come forward and say, this is simple. This is easy. Just go ahead and pass a rule and then find out that what we've done is we've passed a tremendous burden and obligation down to the industry where they just have to throw their hands up in the air and say, well, we'll take our best stab at it. Please don't come and crucify us over the fact we can't get it right.
Thank you. These taxes are collected by wholesalers, aren't they? Or are they not? Are they done in a different way than cigarettes?
No, they're wholesalers, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
And not the snuff.
So the retailers don't... I'm sorry, go ahead. You were about to make a joke and I stepped on it. Go ahead.
Well, it's a dry snuff by now.
snuff it up.
But the Department of Revenue, Mr. Chair, of course, the Aston and they are looking into it. Additionally, I think built in or intrinsic in those assumptions is the ability of the Department of Revenue for enforcement. So in the enforcement process that they go through, in order to be able to collect with the other tobacco, which is a little different than the stamping process that mm-hmm. goes through the that is built in those assumptions that they're able to do that. And they're looking into it. The initial contacts suggest that they don't have a big problem with this. However, they need, if you remember, just to refresh the members' memory, they wanted last time an ability to have in rules the ability to determine weight by themselves rather than only take the manufacturer's declaration. Mm. So in the amendment, we've given the Department of Revenue that process for them to be in. Now, that process probably would need a little bit of funding to go through this. So funding the amounts of added work in addition to some more enforcement probably would be a good idea,
whatever we do,
you decide to go.
Thank you. And of course, with $3.5 million a year to increased income, there would probably be some dollars available for administration if the Ways and Means Committee chose to pass the bill out. Thank you. I think we have enough now to set the thing over for a week and hope to get back some additional information. What's the committee's pleasure? Is there something else we should be asking about as we look at this bill?
Mr. Chair, there are, my recollection is there's somewhere in excess of 100, but maybe fewer than just under 200 wholesalers in the state of Oregon that basically provide these reports. When the department comes forward, I think it would be interesting to know without knowing the wholesalers themselves, but knowing what the broad variety is, because they're eventually going to have to be auditing those folks, looking at all sorts of records. And again, I think when we looked at the ANS marketing folks, their current monthly records with the stamps that they purchase, which are hundreds of thousands of dollars each time they purchase stamps now, but would become millions of dollars if we were to double our tax. What happens is that these reports are very voluminous and have to be monitored. So I just ask the department that they get some sort of feel, or be able to give us some sort of feel of what those number of tobacconists would be, what kind of work is required for the small people, the Monta operation, and the larger folks.
Thank you, Representative. With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2968. And we have one more. I can pull it up here. The work session on House Bill, open the work session on House Bill 2718. Representative Butler's bill. Chris?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2718 pertains to local government and taxes imposed or measured on income. You should have in your packet a -3 amendment, which does a couple of things. It replaces the bill, and it requires the Department of Revenue to provide collection, enforcement, administration, and distribution services for local governments that impose a tax on income as defined in ORS 316, 317, or 318. Those are the personal income taxes and corporate excise or income taxes. It would also allow local governments to impose a tax on state employee retirement benefit programs if the tax is imposed on income as defined in ORS Chapter 316. That's personal income taxes. So it replaces the bill and does those two things.
We end up with a much shorter bill.
A much shorter bill.
Representative Butler, do you want to speak to your proposal?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, you can. Yeah, okay. You can do it from here if you want.
That'd be fine.
Sure. We're in work session.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, there has been some confusion about previous iterations of what it was that we were trying to do, grandfathering versus all political subdivisions that come forward from this time forward, that the manner that they would prescribe the taxation would be in the form as it presently is in within the law. However, those political subdivisions that impose the tax could in fact collect tax on the income from the employee benefits, including the PERS. That way, it's my understanding that these folks could in fact come forward with local taxation schemes, either cities or counties, and that it would be under a uniform method of assessment, and it gives them another tool in the toolbox if in fact we were to go ahead and amend and provide this opportunity for local government to tax on a uniform basis. And I think we had testimony previously from the originator of the bill that said, my offices are in three different places, and I've got three different ways of calculating the tax right now, and the local tax. Couldn't we get some uniformity?
Yes, thank you. Do you have does the department have a comment on this proposal?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. Mr. Chairman, my reading of the Dash 3 amendment is that it simply continues the authorization that exists in current law for us to enter into agreements with local government to administer their local tax should they desire that. We currently do administer programs for Lane County, the Lane Transit District Tax, and TriMet District Tax. We did not enter into an agreement with Multnomah County to administer their income tax, but we have in the past administered the Multnomah County business income tax. So I don't believe the department has any issues with the language that is in the Dash 3 amendment related to the administration of the tax. And then I can't speak to the other provision in the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I'm following this. So your testimony is that this doesn't change anything that is currently in law except giving this new authority to tax state retirement benefit?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosenbaum, the reference to ORS 305-620 on line 9 references the statute that now authorizes us to enter into agreements with local government. I don't see anything in the Dash 3 amendment that mandates any change to that existing law. So unless I am missing something.
So, Mr. Chair, the only thing this bill would do is give to these local entities the ability to tax. This is retiree benefits, essentially? It's like state people who are PERS recipients? That's, am I reading this correctly?
I think that's what it says, Representative.
And are they asking for this authority?
The Lane County had a measure up in the November ballot that was defeated, at least in part because of the campaign that said that it was inherently unfair that state and federal pensioners should be exempt from the tax. But state law at this time requires that those pensions public employee retirement system pensions cannot be taxed at a rate higher than the rate that the state charges, and therefore it excludes local governments from taxing those pensions. This proposal, the Dash 3s, as I understand it, would change that prohibition to allow political subdivisions of the state to impose a tax measured by income under the Chapter 316 on employee retirement benefit programs, and that in effect would remove that limitation and establish a tax on those people with retirement accounts on the retirement income in the same way as we tax other income, and would remove it as a campaign issue in places like Lane County where that where that's come up.
Well, Mr. Chair,
this conversation did take place, I think, in January, so I'm not surprised you don't remember.
About this bill?
Yeah, about the conversation about that particular issue.
Lane County
brought it up. That was Commissioner Fay Stewart, I believe, made that comment. It may have been Commissioner Green.
It just seems so different from the content of the original bill that I'm wondering whether we've attracted the right audience for this idea.
It's possible that we haven't. A way to find out would be to adopt the dash threes and set it for public hearings. then we'd have an engrossed bill, and we would know pretty quickly whether we had interest in the bill or not, or opposition to it.
Worm on it.
And Mr. Chair, as a political subdivision in the state that imposes an income tax as measured may impose the tax, it provides them the opportunity on line 12 to impose the tax based upon the employee retirement benefit programs that they receive. I don't know that it's mandatory. It provides permissive that all income be included in the definition of taxable income, and that's under Chapter 316, which is the personal income tax measure. So I think it overcomes the concern that citizens might have to say, wait a minute, you don't have the right to impose a tax because the state tax is zero on my retirement income. And I'm personally not invested one way or the other, and other than it allows communities to go ahead and say, hey, we have a lot of retirees, we want to protect those retirees, or other communities that say that retirees should pick up their proportionate share if we are going to, in fact, impose an income tax based upon the state income tax calculation.
All right. Representative Berger.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was going to move the dash threes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I move the dash three amendments to House Bill 2718.
Thank you. Representative Berger moves the dash three amendment to House Bill 2718. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chair, you're not planning to move this bill out then today?
I think your point is well taken, that this is a significantly different bill than the one that we're addressing without the dash threes, and that it probably ought to be set for a public hearing.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, in making, if I could speak
yes,
to my
please.
Amendment, yes, it is my intention to move it to have people talk about it. Move
right.
The amendment and to have people talk about this, as suggested.
Mechanically, what this does is we would call for the bill to be re-engrossed by legislative council, and then we'd have an engrossed version to talk about, and we could set it for hearing on the basis of the engrossed version, and then the public would be adequately notified of the content of the bill, because it's a new bill, in effect.
But, Mr. Chair, does the bill doesn't get reprinted until we send it out, does it?
Paul?
Maybe things are different here. This is revenue. Things look different here.
Mr. Chair, you can adopt the dash three amendments so that would become part of the bill. We wouldn't have it printed overnight unless we send it out to another committee. But we could have those adopted, and we could post a public hearing and say that the public hearing is with the dash three amendments for the intent of, for the purpose of comments on those amendments, and then we just make them available at legislative revenue and put them out on the website. So that way, I think there would be pretty good knowledge.
We can give good notice, and I suspect that people who might be interested would get notice. Thank you. Representative Butler.
Thank you to Paul, if I may, Mr. Chair. Paul, is there some grandfathering effect in the paragraph 1 of the dash 3 amendments on lines 5 through 9?
Representative Butler, what that does is it does require the department to provide administrative support if a local jurisdiction uses the same base as the state. So that becomes an option for a local government to use that base.
Okay.
If the local government does not use the same base as defined by the state, the Department of Revenue is not required to provide that administrative support and get their fees.
Okay.
All right, so some number that would come off of the regular return has to be a number that would be used as the basis for the tax.
Correct.
Thank you. I would simply note, committee, for your information, that we talked about the fact that the limitation on taxing the state pensions comes from the old controversy around taxing federal pensions and an attempt by the legislature a number of years ago to circumvent the issue. Very quickly, the court said, no, you're not going to get away with that, and simply did what they were planning to do in the first place. The only holdover from that is the statute that restricts taxing of PERS accounts only at the amount that the state actually taxes personal income. Am I close?
That's correct, Mr. Chair. And there is a provision in law that caps the amount, the percentage in which income can be taxed. So, which is the top rate that the state has?
The PERS income.
Right.
Right. Not other income.
Right.
Thank you. Deborah?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Deborah Buchanan with the Department of Revenue. I appreciate Mr. Warner's clarification of what is in paragraph one, because one of the things that we have told local government when they want us to help administer is a tax is it helps to start with our tax base as the beginning point. And to that end, the language in 10 through 13 assists in that, because there would not be that modification of Oregon taxable income for the state retiree benefits. So it would help a great deal in if we are to administer.
Well, it actually does make a change then in the current law to that extent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Is there anything further on the dash threes? Is there objection to the dash threes? There is objection. Would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
Representative
Brim. Aye.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gelfin.
Excused.
She asked me. She wanted to come and vote.
Oh, she wants to vote? Okay, let's wait for a second, see if she's ready.
She's gone.
No, not there, no.
Oh, here she comes. Not excused. Representative Gelfin, we're voting on substituting the dash threes for
aye.
The bill.
Representative
Wilson.
Aye.
Representative
Olson.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative
Wood.
No.
Representative Weisman. Chair votes aye. So the motion carries, and with that, and with the understanding we've already got about further hearing on the bill, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2718. And I think we finished our business for today. Have I got it all this time?
Yeah.
Unlike Thursday. All right. With that, we are adjourned. Thank you, committee.